to give a not so technical answer, I can give a technical answer, but it's probably better to give an experiential explanation to make it relevant to you. The differences between the first absorption and the second and third and fourth are levels of refineness of the mind. And in the first absorption, the body disappears. So it's a stage of letting go. It's a stage of abandoning. So that when one starts to experience this cessation of the body, when the body ceases to be in one's experience, then one knows the happiness of being free from a body. One knows the happiness that actually the body is physically burdensome. It's heavy. There's pains associated with the body. And when one goes to the mind and just experiences the happiness of the mind, and there's that joy, happiness, and rapture, delight there, and also the mind is keeping on its meditation object, sustained and applied to that meditation object. And the mind is unified on that meditation object. It doesn't want to be distracted and go to other things. Then it absorbs into that meditation object and becomes one with it. So that is what the quality of this jhana is. It's to absorb into this object with delight, a wholesome object. And thinking disappears. Painful feeling disappears. The body disappears. And there's just this happiness and delight. So one sees, when one comes out of that first jhana, one picks up the body again, starts thinking again, painful feeling arises again, then one sees with wisdom at that time, the insight arises that these things, when they cease, are happy and blissful. When they arise again, that is suffering. Therefore, one understands this concept of the cessation of things leads, the cessation of all sankharas leads to the highest bliss when these things cease. And then that's why these jhanas are important for the sustaining and development of insight. And then the second jhana is a refinement of that. You don't have to put any effort in sustaining the mind on the meditation object. It becomes unified totally with the object. And there's just rapture and happiness and unification there. And then the mind goes and abides in that state. It can go in further to the third jhana, which is it lets go of gladness, which is a coarser quality of mind, and there's just happiness and unification of mind and equanimity. And in that, the mind abides, is unified and blissful. And then it's a fading away, the stilling of even happiness. Then the mind goes to equanimity, where mindfulness is complete. It's a culmination of mindfulness in the fourth jhana. And there's just unification of mind, equanimity, and the strength of right mindfulness. And so these qualities are all the subduing of coarser qualities and going to more refined and refined states of abiding in the mind. It's like walking on a hot road in the sun and you're thinking, maybe if I go and sit under a tree, it'll be cooler. And you sit under a tree, but the tree has got not complete shade, but at least it's better than walking in the sun. And then you see a building, and you think, maybe if I go into the building, that will be cooler. And you go into the room of the building, and the first room, it's even cooler in there, and more pleasant, and more comfortable couch to sit. And you sit down on that couch. And then you think, maybe if I go into one of the inner rooms, it'll be even more quieter, more peaceful, more cooler. And you go into one of the inner rooms, and it is even more pleasant. Then you see that there's another room, and you go into that, and that one's air-conditioned. And you lay down there and rest. So it's more and more pleasant, more and more peaceful abiding as you go into those more restful states. That's a question that I haven't read explained. I I don't know whether anyone can really say, give you a reason why, except for speculation. And my speculation is that the Buddha is showing the refinement of mind. This is almost his last teaching in the world. And not only he gave his verbal last teachings, but this is his mental last teaching in the world. And he's showing the subtleties of the mind, the refinement of the mind, going through all the stages of the jhanas, and then going into the arupa jhanas, then leaving those arupa jhanas and coming back down, and then going back up through them into the fourth jhana, and then taking nibbana from there. And it's also, I think, not only is showing that the refinement of it, it's also showing the qualities of a Sammabuddha, because it's a Sammabuddha, a fully enlightened Buddha, who knows all the extents of the characteristics of all the jhanas, both the rupa and arupa jhanas, and knows their limitations, knows the ways to develop them, how to develop them, the qualities needed to develop them, the states of those jhanas. And also it's pointing something about his knowledge of all those states, because many teachers prior to the Buddha and after the Buddha have taken those jhanas as being ultimate truth, as being nibbana. So it's also showing that those states are not final nibbana in itself as well. So not only is it the necessary states for refining the mind, as he's letting go of the khandhas going into parinibbana, but also it shows as a teaching in itself that those states are not parinibbana. That's my speculation. The Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Ananda, you saw that he saw that probably from the outward signs that the Buddha had no physical sign of breathing. The Buddha went through the rupa jhanas into the arupa jhanas, and of course at that time the physical movement of the body would have been very still. There's no measurable breath in those jhanas. Even in the fourth jhana, a person can appear as if they've passed away already. And so Ananda, I'm assuming, was looking from the physical signs. But the Venerable Anuruddha, he had the divine eye. He was a foremost disciple of the Buddha's. He was an enlightened disciple. And he was able to use his psychic knowledge to know the mind of the Buddha, what mental state he was in. Wouldn't have been able to follow him into parinibbana, but he was able to know the movement of his mind through those psychological states of going in and out using his mind. So it's only through the knowledge of Anuruddha that we really understand what the Buddha was doing in those states as well. No, Mara hasn't obtained the stages of enlightenment, but the Buddha predicted that Mara would. It's very interesting that even in the suttas, Mahakasapa described that in a previous life, the period of another Buddha, he had been Mara in that time of that particular Buddha. So it is possible that, as everything is impermanent, there's no idea in Buddhism of eternal evil as well, or eternal bad, or eternal hell. So too, Mara can overcome ignorance and eventually obtain enlightenment, just as Mahamoggallana said that he'd been Mara in a previous Buddha's time. This Mara is represented in Buddhism in a number of ways. Firstly, as a deity, like when Mara takes on a physical appearance or appear to the Buddha as Mara. Secondly, as defilements. So when defilements arise in the mind, greed, hatred, and delusion, you say, oh, that's Mara. That's the temptations. Like the temptations in the mind. That's Mara. Mara appears as the personification of death as well. And also there's another Mara called Kanda Mara, which is the Maras which arise according to the five Kandas. For example, sometimes we're sitting meditation and we're very happy and very peaceful and suddenly we feel itchy. Yes? And we think, I've got to move, I've got to itch my nose. And then we itch our nose and the good meditation disappears and we find that there was nothing on our nose anyway. And that's a symbol of Kanda Mara, the bodily Mara. Or we're sitting and we're meditating and then a painful feeling arises. And we think, if I sit here any longer, you know, I'm going to be crippled. And so we move and the good meditation disappears. And that's an example of Kanda Mara, the Mara of the feeling. Or we're sitting here and then, you know, our minds are all over the place. Thoughts are coming in and out and they're really silly thoughts and that disturbs the meditation. We give up. I'm not going to have anything to do with this. I can't meditate anymore. It's another example of Kanda Mara. It's the disturbances to doing anything wholesome that's manifest through the body and mind. It's another personification of Mara. Our representation of Mara. Have I got all of them? That's four, I think. What's the other one? Death? Yeah, there's a Deva Mara. That's where Mara appears as a Deva being. That's they're definitely there. So there's Deva Mara, Kanda Mara, Mara's death, Mara's death. Mara as personification of evil and defilements. They're the four five representations of Mara. At the last moment, not necessarily. I don't think it doesn't actually describe the stages, but they certainly would go. All arahants have purified the jhanas, so definitely they would go through those experiences of letting go. Whether they go through all the arupa jhanas, I'm not so sure, because not necessarily all arahants have developed the arupa jhanas, but they certainly have developed all the four jhanas. And so, as I said, the four jhanas are stages of letting go. Letting go of the body, letting go of the mind. And so, yes, that's a natural inclination of the mind to abandon before going to nibbana. But whether that goes to the arupa jhanas, I'm not so sure, because that's not necessary. I was speaking to one monk I highly respect, and he said that one of the distinguishing features of an arahant with immense, what we call barometers, is their ability to go use the arupa jhanas. Someone with immense barometers and has the arupa jhanas can have a very powerful effect on the world and other people. Their mind is almost limitless. But not all arahants will have the arupa jhanas. After paying respects to the stupa here, we'll make our way to the Thai temple. And at the Thai temple there, they have built a new stupa. And recently they've enshrined a Buddha relic, which is originally from Kusinara. And it was offered to the previous kings of Thailand. And then the present king of Thailand has offered it back to the stupa at the Thai temple in Kusinara, and it was just enshrined there not so long ago. So we can go and pay respects there. and Ofra Papa.